Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's become somewhat of a tradition that we talk about notable books of 2008 during this time when many of us give books for holiday gifts, and this was brought to our attention during our recent open line. You need to do the notable books of 2008. Rhonda was right on the phone. We have the guests. We're doing the show this hour and welcoming your phone calls, too. Think about it for a minute and then give us a call because it will be great to get a discussion going here of your notable book of 2008, be it fiction, nonfiction, short stories, poetry, children's books, whatever. Notable books of 2008, our subject this hour. And our phone number, as always, is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. We have two guests. Oh, and then our email, how could I forget, is talk@wpr.org. We'll have two guests with us this hour. Daniel Golden is general manager of the Harry W. Schwartz Bookshops here in the Milwaukee area. And a little later, Sam Tannenhaus will join us, editor of the New York Times Book Review and the Week in Review section that you read on Sundays. And so that's what's going on this hour. We start with Daniel Golden, general manager of the Harry W. Schwartz Bookshops. Hello, Daniel. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hello. It's a pleasure. I'm a Wisconsin Public Radio groupie, so very exciting.
Oh, good. We're so happy to have you with us. And I'm one of your bookshops groupies. I was there last night, as a matter of fact, getting my husband's Christmas present and my brother's and all of that. So you guys are the best. You know, every time I look at your list, though, I think I just don't have time to read fiction. And a lot of this is fiction, and it sounds so interesting, and I just can't get to it because of newspapers and nonfiction. But I guess that's okay, huh?
I think so. And, you know, one of the things that a bookstore tries to do and all sorts of people are trying to do is sort of cut through so many books that are being published every year and try to give somebody a reading experience that they want, because you're always afraid if people don't read that much fiction, and a lot of people don't, and you read something that's a dud for you, you're not going to read more. But if you read an amazing book that really connects with you personally, because it's not always the same book for everybody,
mm-hmm.
Then you're going to say, I want that experience again.
Right. Do you have a lot of friends who you say to them, what are you reading, and you talk about what you're reading, and you read the same book just because you admire each other so much and you know your tastes and you have such an affinity for each other that you know other people will like the book that you're reading?
I think everybody does. It's the word-of-mouth factor on book reading is probably the number one thing that drives people to a book. I am constantly asking people what they're reading. My signature at the end of my email lists what I'm reading and ask people what they're reading, and I love getting emails back from people. I start every meeting that we have in the company asking people, going around the circle asking what they're reading. Cashiers in the supermarkets, anyone that I have any sort of relationship
with
won't think I'm a crazy person.
Well, what a nice thing to do, though, to talk to everybody about that.
I think people, booksellers are kind of, a lot of times, see themselves as, you know, we're merchants, but we also have a mission. And, I do become a bit of an evangelist about it, and I think lots of people I work with do as well. And I do think it's interesting because it really cuts through, the conversation becomes an authentic conversation
Yes.
that you're having with somebody.
Yes, how true. All right, what you just read.
What I've just read?
Mm-hmm.
I have been trying to read. I am so looking forward to that top 10 on the New York Times list. I was scanning through the list and saying, is there a book that I could read that might hit that list? And so I just read Netherland by Joseph O'Neill, which
mm-hmm.
came out in the spring. Amazing reviews about a Dutchman in New York after 9/11 and how he gets into the world of cricket and becomes enamored of this West Indian man that's going to build a cricket stadium in Brooklyn. And they were calling it the greatest post-colonial novel of our time.
And you talk about it being for the cricket-obsessed.
for the cricket-obsessed, yes.
I don't know how many cricket-obsessed people there are, but maybe there are a few, huh?
of course, that's a joke, but really.
Right.
You don't really, you know, that's one of the really great things about a book, whether it's a fiction or nonfiction or a mystery or a science fiction, is you want to you get to know about something you don't know about. I mean, one of the things that's so interesting about mysteries is how often people want to read about other countries and other cultures. Certainly when I'm reading nonfiction, it's as educational as anything else, whether it's, you know, a narrative, which is probably the most enjoyable kind of nonfiction to read. It explores a world, and certainly that cricket mm-hmm. world is something that I don't know much about.
Right. This one intrigued me that you wrote for us, The Next 100 Years by George Friedman, a private intelligence and forecasting company head, makes his predictions. I love predictions. Don't underestimate Poland, you say. Poland? What's going on in Poland?
Well, one of the tricks about book selling is we have to read ahead. And so I'm sad to say that book hasn't come out yet. But people can obviously go wherever they go and ask to get it in. He's a private intelligence officer. As you know, we've outsourced much of our traditional government jobs. And he actually does private predictions for the government and other people. And his predictions are based on geopolitics. So the geography of where somebody is determines how they interact with the world.
Oh.
And so one of the things that's interesting, why he sees Poland as so key, is it's strategically between Germany and Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And it would probably be the country that, if there was some sort of problem, it would be probably the country that the United States would most support, leading it to get a lot of economic benefits that would make it more powerful.
Hmm.
So there you go.
Yeah. I know you always have people, and they're very good selections. One of the nice things, you have these shelves that have descriptions of books that people on your staff have recommended, which I think is a very nice feature.
Oh, thanks. We love doing it. And
yeah.
So, you know, sometimes booksellers, I like suggest that people talk to customers about what they're reading, readers or what you'd call them. But sometimes, you know, the customer doesn't want to necessarily have the interaction, or you might be too busy or you're shy. And so the idea of having these staff rec sections around the store, they've really grown in importance, I think, in most independent bookstores. I think 15 years ago, I don't think we even had them, or we had one little shelf. And now we usually have 2 to 3 cases in a store of recommendations. And I believe I was in Boulder, a Boulder bookstore, and I think their whole front room was recommendations of one way or another. It's a way of browsing. You know, I think the browsing experience is so fun in a bookstore,
right,
of finding something that you don't expect.
Mm-hmm.
And those recommendations, because they're not specifically ordered, we're just saying they're good books. It can be a really interesting experience to look through and see what people are reading.
Mm-hmm. So how do you like what you're reading right now, The Woman in White by Wilkie Collins?
I am loving it.
Are you?
It is. We've been trying to, you know, I try to read some classics. I feel like I'm not as well educated as I should be on older books, and people are always expecting me to have read more than I have. Going backwards, I wasn't an English major, I was a math major in college.
Were you really?
And we didn't read too many novels or even literary nonfiction. Yes. So
huh.
I'm good at the little, you know, at doing our daily record sheet. But but The Woman in White is considered one of the first sensational novels, which was the Gothic genre, which took place in, like, English and Italian castles, and brought it down to the middle classes. And it is sort of the forerunner of the thriller in a lot of ways. One of the interesting things is we just read a Dickens book, a few of us together, and the authors come together in a new book by Dan Simmons, who's most known as a science fiction writer. But his next book, which is coming right after Christmas, called Drood, is about Charles Dickens, and it's narrated by Wilkie Collins.
Oh.
So we're going to all then read Drood afterwards.
Uh-huh. I haven't read Dickens since college. Long time. Shame on me. Dickens is worth reading.
It was so interesting just because it's so influential in so many mm-hmm. other books that are written immediately afterwards and then up through the present day. I mean, so much influence on other books. And I feel like if I haven't read some of these books, you don't get you don't exactly get what you're reading until you read all the reviews, and this way you can pick things up for yourself.
Sure. Here's an email from Andy. My pick for book of the year is Armageddon in Retrospect. It was a brilliant finish to Kurt Vonnegut's brilliant career, something any war-minded individual should read.
We had Jordan at our Downer Avenue store is a huge Kurt Vonnegut fan, he is a bookseller favorite. I think there's not somebody who hits the age, who is a lifelong reader, you hit the age of your late teens, early 20s, and you discover that Kurt Vonnegut is the genius of all time.
Right,
And you know, a part of that stays with you for the rest of your life. We always, especially after somebody passes away, the books often come to the forefront. We've been definitely had a resurgence of Studs Terkel this year with his passing, and David Foster Wallace. We certainly miss them, and maybe there's a book in the trunk that we don't know about.
Right. And what about Studs had a book that was published, I think, just a couple days after he died. Is that out yet? Do you know?
Yes, it
is. It
is. And I am, it's so sad. I don't know if it's computers that make my memory go bad or just age, but the new book was called P.S. Further
yes,
Thoughts
right.
from a Lifetime of Listening.
Right.
So, and it's his unpublished writings.
Hmm.
So, but he's done a number of memoirs of various sorts, as well as his famous histories, and he was just
right.
a wonderful guy. And I believe he still came to us signing for us in his 90s.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. I have a picture, actually, on my bulletin board of Studs at one of your stores, and I can't remember what book it was, but it was when he was in his 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite a remarkable
guy.
Very
dynamic.
Yeah, and he is worth reading again right now. There's just no doubt about it. All the books about jazz and death and working and, what a contribution he made.
I think probably he'd probably have a lot to say on our economic times as well.
Yes, exactly. He sure would. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. The question of the hour is, what was your notable book of 2008? And if you have questions about any of the books that we're talking about, or the book that you think should have been a notable book, whether or not it was, feel free to give us a call. We go to Jackie as our first caller from Brookfield. Hi, Jackie.
Thanks so much. What a great show. I just wanted to say I'm a little behind on my reading. I read The Kite Runner and then followed up with A Thousand Splendid Suns this fall. And wow, it just makes such a difference. Reading, I'm an avid listener of your show and the NPR and New York Times, and it just puts in perspective what's happening around the world in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
So it just touched me.
One of the things that I think is so great about Khaled Hosseini's books is that you can listen to news stories, read news stories, read nonfiction books, and there's something about putting the book in the story in novel form that emotionally connects with you, and you finish his books and say, okay, now I understand what's happening in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely. I have 3 cups of tea sitting next to my bed. I haven't gotten to it yet. I know that's not a fiction, but oh my goodness, those 2 books were phenomenal, and I'm wrapping them up and putting them under the tree for my girls. So
meditating sort of on this, the 3 cups of tea factor, kind of this inspirational nonfiction, and we're trying to figure out what would be the, because that and Eat, Pray, Love, certainly the pray part, has a lot of there's something about reading certain kind of books that make you feel better, sort of inspire you to be better, so to speak. And I was trying to figure out what the next one would be. We were just saying that maybe a book about a Unitarian minister to game wardens called Here If You Need Me, which came out in paperback this summer, might be that book.
Here If You Need Me.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And if for Khaled Hosseini is recommending a book called City of Thieves that a number of booksellers have really loved. It is not as realistic as his book. It takes place during the Russian siege of Leningrad, and it is a thriller, but he is a huge fan of the book. It might be, it's connected to the fact that David Benioff, the writer, did do the screenplay of his novel. But it's I highly recommend the book, and it's one of those books that we've had reads from, like, a 23-year-old woman and a 70-year-old man, and they both love it. So it's about two prisoners who have to find a dozen eggs for a wedding, or they'll be put to death. They have to go back into the war zone. I know, a little crazy, but anyway, that's inspirational. What would be another thing? If you, I would say, you know, we were talking about, I was talking about Eat, Pray, Love, and one of the books that I would suggest from that would be, I'm blanking out. This Kathleen Flynn, The Sharper Your Knife, The Less You Cry. And it's a book about her basically throwing her life up in the air and deciding to go back to cooking school in France. Really wonderful reads. It's out in paperback now. Very, very good word of mouth. I love when one of our booksellers recommends a book to a customer, and that customer comes back and starts telling us about it, or another person comes in and says, I really love that book. What do you, you know, thank you for recommending it, or what else do you have?
Sure.
I had a one of the books that we've been crazy about this fall is called Fault Lines by Nancy Houston, and one of my customers came in, and she was looking for more Nancy Houston books. This is a book that was shortlisted for the Orange Prize, which is an award that goes to women. It has a judging panel of anybody, but it goes to women. She also won the Prix Femina, which I kind of love the bookended nature of this. This is an award that can go to anyone, but the judging panel is women. It's about it's basically four generations of a family told backwards through the eyes of six-year-old children in the family. And it's just amazing. And so we were discussing that book, and we immediately led to The Elegance of the Hedgehog, which has been one of the independent bookstore phenomenons of 2008.
Really?
Another French book, yes.
Huh.
I don't know what's going on with France this year, but Jean-Marie Gustave Leclisio won, and my pronunciation is terrible because
thought it was great.
Oh, won the Nobel Prize, and we have another book called Sarah's Key, which has become a New York Times bestseller, and we're selling like crazy, and that's also a novel set in France. It was actually written in English, but the author had actually wrote her previous eight novels in French, and this was the first book that she wrote in English, and that's been a phenomenon with us, so... Goodness, I don't know.
Yeah. More phone calls in a moment. 800-486-8655. We're talking about the important books, the books that Daniel recommends for being noteworthy of 2008. A little bit later, we will be speaking with the book editor, book and review editor for the New York Times, who's also the editor of the Week in Review, about their notable 100, which was published last weekend. Our number is 800-486-8655, or email is talk@wpr.org. Daniel Golden is our guest the first part of the show, and he is the general manager of Harry W. Schwartz Bookshops. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go back to phone calls and to Stephanie from Appleton next. Hi, Stephanie.
Hello.
Hello.
My books, this is not a type of book I ever read typically, but it's The Ayatollah Begs to Differ, The Paradox of Modern Iran. And it's completely fascinating, and I'm learning so much. So I'm wondering if you've read that one.
I didn't. And one of the things, though, that you said that's so interesting is I often find when I read a book that's very different from what I normally read, it makes a much bigger impact on me. And I'm wondering how you feel about, like, is it the fact that the book is so different? When people read outside their comfort zone, sometimes a great book outside their comfort zone, they're, you know, you figure that's a book you're going to remember in 5 years. That's sometimes the way I think about it. Is this just going to be another of the same for me or something different? I know that it's gotten some great reads, and I know that, you know, in terms of the Times, for what they will often do for the year end, they will often have some sort of I'm looking for Dexter Filkins is what I'm thinking of. You know, they will normally have some modern interpretation, and they're certainly trying to keep to subject sometimes have some books on subjects that are very much in the public eye. I was thinking of the book The Forever War by Dexter Filkins, which got a front page Times review. And I just had a book customer come up to me when I was working over the weekend and tell me once again how much he loved that book.
He was also a marvelous interview. Sometimes I hear people on the radio as I'm driving around town and say, oh, I got to get that book. And somebody had already interviewed him. I wanted to have him on, but he's so worth listening to as well. Beautiful speaker. Which is a talent. You know, a lot of people who write books are not great interviews, but many of them are.
It's very we find that with author events as well. You would assume that if somebody was really bad on the road that they wouldn't send them out. But that's right. Not quite always the case.
Yes, I can understand that. One person who lives up to her billing all the time is Maya Angelou, and I know that she's been a bestseller at Schwartz. She is... Oh, you just enter another world when you're talking to her and listening to her, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. I do not believe if we've, you know, it's been a long time if she's been there, but she has a couple of really great books actually out right now. She has a kid's version of Amazing Peace, which is got her poem that she read at the White House in 2005, and she's got the adult book Letter to My Daughter, both selling very, very well. You know, there are those people who stick out from everybody else as being amazing presences. I know Sherman Alexie would definitely be one. He's just an overwhelming presence. You know, when you go to hear him read his book that won the National Book Award for Young Readers last year, absolutely, True Diary of a Part-Time Indian continues to sell very well.
Yeah. Thanks, Stephanie, for your call. Michelle is next from Fort Atkinson. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, good morning.
Hello.
The book I'm reading right now is never going to win any kind of awards, but it's just another suggestion, other than buying local from your local booksellers if you can, is by reading some local authors. And also, this is kind of a near and dear to my heart, but if you go back and read some children's Christmas books during the holidays, I just reread The Velveteen Rabbit, and it's such a beautiful story.
Oh, I love that story, yeah.
But it just, it's close to my heart, and like I said, you know, just going back to, you know, maybe local authors, or they might never win a wonderful award, but I just finished reading an anthology called Catopolis that has a local author from Fort Atkinson in it, and it's a cute little book. It's a very fast read, but it's about the life, the secret life of cats. It's never going to win an award, but like I said, suggesting going back and looking at local authors as well.
We have found that people, especially I think it might be connected to the independent shop local movements, and people are very sensitive to all sorts of localness. We've always done very well with our regional sections for nonfiction, but we actually just put in read local cases in our stores, and I'm trying to get that spelling of that cat book. But we talk, it's like I have to check it after I get off the phone. But, you know, and that's actually been, while I'm in the stores, people are really interested in looking at well-known people like Jane Hamilton, certainly, and Chris Radish, and people like C.J. Freibel, who teach at Marquette, and Liam Callanan, who are at UWM, and, you know, our poet laureates. And, you know, it's been very nice to see, have a place where we can regularly feature people in Southeast Wisconsin in particular.
Mm-hmm. Have you read Dewey yet? We have the author on next week.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
It was one of those books, you know, we get a couple of advance copies.
Right.
And I try to be as generous as I can. And so when I have a bookseller who wants, who asks me for a book, I try to chase it down because I would like to get a good read and I'd like to start recommending it to people. And so, of course, I never got my hands on one, and I have to go buy my copy because, of course, as you know, I have lots of friends who are librarians and lots of friends who are cat lovers, and we're just, you know, people just love the book so much that it does seem perfect. I think maybe when I'm relaxing a little more after the season, I might get to it. Have you read it yet?
No, we have her on next week, so I'll get to it. You know, I have been, you know, fairly so criticized for doing way too many dog shows and not enough cat shows, because I am a dog lover, I must admit, and have some allergies to cats. So I just love dog books, and I love dogs so much. I've gone overboard, and I will raise dogs when I retire if my husband stays with me during this venture. I'm not sure he will. But my book, one of the notables, and I'm just over the top with this, Daniel, was I love John Katz's books. And the latest one, Izzy and Lenore, The Hospice Dog, touched my heart so much. I just loved it, and I went so overboard that I – wrote to Barack Obama's campaign through some contact Rhonda had by email in Washington saying, I got to get in on this puppy thing. You got to have John Katz pick your dog for you because he knows how to pick a dog. If anybody in this country knows how to pick a dog, but it's such a beautiful book. And I'm just, what can I say? I like dog books, but I'm going to do this. I'm going to do the cat book next week, and I understand it's wonderful.
You know, you have to be excused because there are just a lot more dog narratives than there are cat narratives. And it's been nice to have a good cat book, but, you know, those John Katz books, they are national bestsellers, but they just sell, you know, I think it's partly due to your enthusiasm, I have to say. But, you know, we just have huge fans in the stores, and we just, you know, we've been really lucky to have Mr. Katz a number of times, and it's like a love fest, and the books are great. And one of the only sad things about the animal books is, you know, someone has to die. And probably the pet, not always, but You know, there's a good cry too. There's something about, you know, obviously death is a part of literature and it's part of life. There's the if you get into birds, we've got the hot book Alex and Me.
Oh yes,
about the parrot.
I saw that yesterday in the store.
Is it good? Yes, it's very good. It's getting really good reviews, and there continue to be a lot of dog narratives. And in fact, probably the most popular literary novel of the year maybe not at the level of winning big awards, but it's going to probably win the bookseller, like the Indie Bound or whatever we're calling it, novel for our favorite novel of the year, is The Story of Edgar Sawtelle by David Robleski. And he is just a wonderful novel. Obviously, it's an Oprah pick, and it is set in Wisconsin, and he did grow up here, and it's based on his family farm, and then they raise dogs together. He's a dog lover. He's obsessed with dogs. He told me when he was in the store that his dream was getting on Calling All Pets. His dream. I even tried to send. I was like, we just couldn't stop talking about Patricia McConnell. And I don't know. I do listen to the show, but I missed him. I hope he gets on. Because it's like, can you imagine this is like the number one book of the year, and he's thinking about, people are thinking, who's going to interview you? And he's thinking, oh, I do love that Wisconsin Public Radio show.
Oh, all right. Well, we'll make this happen. Okay, we can't leave it at this. Daniel, thank you so much. We hope to talk to you at the beginning of 2009.
Thank you very much. Thanks. It was a pleasure.
Thanks, Daniel. Daniel Golden is general manager of the Harry W. Schwartz Bookshops. Great bookstores here in the Milwaukee area. We'll have to make that happen for that author, right? We're just switching guests. We're still talking notable books, wonderful books, your best read of 2008. Sam Tannenhaus is joining us now, editor of the New York Times Book Review and also the Week in Review. And they have just published their 100 notable books of 2008. Book Review selected the list from books reviewed since December 2nd of 2007 when they published their previous notables list. This is a listener request, and we've done this for a few years in a row now with Sam as we looked at the New York Times picks. And we'll welcome more of your phone calls as well. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Or email address, feel free to use that, is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Hi, Sam. Thanks so much.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm all right, Sam. How are you?
Here we are again.
I know.
Another year.
Our little tradition, our big tradition. It's nice to have you on.
My pleasure.
You know, every time I read your list, though, I realize that I'm pretty well read in nonfiction, but not in fiction because of what I do for a living. And
right.
And your descriptions of these books make me want to read so many of the nonfiction. So I can only read a couple. What should they be, Sam?
Well, oh boy, you know, anytime you name some titles, you leave some others
I know.
Out. But two works of fiction I would really recommend to just about any readers are a terrific novel called Netherland by Joseph O'Neill.
Okay.
Probably the best most favorably reviewed novel of the year. It's an unusual book. It's narrated by a Dutchman who is making a ton of money on Wall Street right before September 11th, but it's not really another September 11th novel. Although his life is upended by that, he turns the story into almost a retelling of The Great Gatsby, although with a lot of humor. Hmm. His wife and young son go to London. They kind of freak out after all the terrible things happening in New York. And the narrator, who is Dutch, as I said, rediscovers his love of cricket and ends up playing in cricket matches in all five boroughs of New York City on a team composed of South Asian and West Indian immigrants. Hmm. And it's a kind of love song to New York as a haven for immigrants. And it's very fun and charming, written with great style and wit. And it kind of reminds you that America is still sort of the land of dreams and promise. It's a beautiful little novel that I recommend. Turned down by 14 publishers before the 15th.
No, I love those stories.
Yeah, that's always a good story. And the other book, again, it's so hard to choose, but for those of your listeners who are familiar with the short stories of Jhumpa Lahiri, a wonderful young short story writer and novelist, some will know the film, not especially good, called The Namesake, which was based on her novel. But she has a new collection called Unaccustomed Earth. And most of these stories were first published in The New Yorker, and they're really stories about families. Mm. Mothers and daughters, fathers and sons, grandparents. They have kind of an immigrant, expatriate angle. These are people who left Calcutta and now the tragic Mumbai, they're still called Bombay in her fiction, who've come to make new lives in America, and they're very ambitious, very hopeful immigrants who also struggle to reconcile old world traditions and values with all the excitements and sort of upheavals of 21st century life in America. But she uses all of that really to write about families and generations, and they're just beautifully written tales, very absorbing characters, tremendously vivid and real. So those are two books I'd recommend.
Great, that sounds marvelous. I really have started liking lately reading either beautifully poetic essays or stories before going to sleep at night because it somehow enters your dreams.
Well, yes, there's a kind of dreamlike quality to the best fictional prose. You really see that in Toni Morrison's new novel, A Mercy, which is another really exceptional work. Maybe her best since Beloved, which
really?
Novel that essentially won her the Nobel Prize. Huh. As everyone knows, Nobel Prize is awarded for life's work, but there'll be one or two works in particular that elevate an author. And for Toni Morrison, the novels were Song of Solomon and Beloved. This small book, I think it's only 160 pages long, is very unusual historical novel because it's set in the 1680s in America. And what she found, Morrison's readers will know, she does a great deal of historical research. And, of course, her theme is the African-American experience. But back then, there were very few laws about race in America. America really was a kind of Eden where all these different nationalities and ethnicities were clashing and but also living side by side. So in the novel you see, for instance, a black man who is a blacksmith, a freedman who's paid for his work, and indentured white servants from England who are essentially slaves. Hmm. And so she shows you that the America we know with its very fixed, rigid caste line didn't exist back then. It actually came into existence later. So it's almost as if she's found the original American Eden. It's a fascinating book. But I think of it because of what you say about the poetic writing. It's written in almost a kind of dream song. Hmm. There are different female voices. It centers on female characters. And each one has her own kind of idiosyncratic music that she thinks or writes in. And she blends them all together. So it's fascinating.
Oh, it sounds wonderful.
Yeah, a very difficult book. Mm-hmm. It's not easy to read, but mm-hmm. very rewarding.
Okay. Let's go to Kathleen from Milwaukee. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, great show. And here, one caller had mentioned reading out of your comfort zone, and this one really affected me. It's Take Some Courage to Read, The Death of Innocence by Richard Firstman and Jamie Tallon. It's about a woman whose five children ostensibly died of SIDS under the care of this world-famous doctor who was researching SIDS, but it had turned out that she had killed them.
Oh, my God.
Jeez.
Yeah, and it's really a book. Well, besides that, it's also a book about how bad science can overwhelm so many of us, even other scientists, and seduce us into believing what isn't true. So it's in some ways a wonderful mystery story, but it's also kind of a wake-up call in terms of how the media reports science that isn't really proven. Wonderful book.
Are you familiar with it, Sam?
I'm not, but
it
I sure would like to be. It sounds a
yes.
scary, but also fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, it reminds you what the caller says about how we kind of build a mystique of authority around areas like science. It makes me think of the economy, too.
Mm-hmm.
Here we have all these economic experts, you know, who told us Wall Street could never have a crash like it did in 1929, that we know too much ever to have another depression, and here we are sort of on the brink of one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true, there's a paradox in that experts are the ones who can most easily mislead and distort because we grant so much authority to them. So in a way, they end up serving these mystical roles. It's fascinating.
Thanks, Kathleen. One of your notables, and I checked this one thinking we need to do a show on this, The Trillion-Dollar Meltdown, Easy Money, High Rollers, and the Great Credit Crash. It sounds like it might be must reading, I hate to say it, for next year.
Yeah, I'm afraid so, and our poor new president is stuck with all of this.
Ugh. What a lot to have to deal with next year, huh?
Yeah, so much.
So much.
And we'll be seeing a lot of books that get into all this now. And, you know, it's interesting to see the books that are appearing again, resurfacing on the bestseller list. Doris Kearn Goodwin,
mm-hmm.
Team of Rivals, which is a wonderful book I recommend.
I love that one, too.
It's a really good one, don't you think? And,
yes.
And so you know, since you've read it, that there's a lot of misconception about it. People think that Lincoln appointed to his cabinet ideological opponents, but he didn't. These were his rivals within the Republican Party, right? So I was just talking to someone here at the New York Times who didn't get that it doesn't mean a team of rivals is not necessarily a bipartisan arrangement. It just means people who competed against you.
Right.
Which is what Barack Obama's also done. For readers who want to get a sense of why Obama is so interested in Lincoln, I think Goodwin's book will help you see
mm-hmm.
it. Not just because he was a genius, and no one can be another Lincoln, and that's impossible, but temperamentally they're kind of similar. They don't hold grudges. They try to figure out what people really want and then understand them, have a lot of empathy. Very interesting.
Yeah, you know, it is interesting. And we interviewed, this is also a great book, though I love Lincoln, but we interviewed the author of Lincoln and the Great Secession Winter of 1860 to 1861, which is profoundly interesting. Holzer is the author's name. He's the head of the Bicentennial
Commission. Oh, sure, Harold Holzer.
Yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
well, that was the bleak time. That was like FDR's
incredible.
Great Depression, those months.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he also said, which I found interesting, Sam, which is an indication of generosity of spirit, that Doris Kearns Goodwin gave him all the material that she had of that four-month time period, which was such a nice thing for another author to do, wasn't it? Just open up her library to him.
It's also the sign of a first-rate author. You know, I found, because, you know, I've written some history myself, is that the very best scholars are the ones most willing to share their research because of the confidence they have in their mastery of their subject and in the quality of work they're doing. It's the inferior ones who become very secretive and hoard what they have because they secretly fear they don't have enough.
Huh.
So I'm not surprised at all that someone of her caliber would be that generous. Doesn't surprise me.
Sam Tannenhaus, our guest this half hour, editor of the New York Times Book Review and the Week in Review, and we're talking about the 100 notable books of 2008, those that were published by the New York Times this past weekend, and also talking about your notable books. Kathleen from Milwaukee, thanks so much for your call. I think you sent Sam to the bookshop for the one you recommended, and we'll take more recommendations in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go back to phone calls and to Pete from La Crosse. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hello, Pete.
A book that I read earlier this year, which I very definitely recommend, it was published late in 2007. It's a difficult book to read because it is so full of information. It's called Good Calories, Bad Calories by Gary Taubes. And he chronicles the research that's been done in food and dietary areas for the last 50 years or so.
Ooh.
And what's amazing about the book is how little correspondence there is between peer-reviewed studies that have been replicated over and over again and the recommendations that our doctors and other so-called health experts keep prescribing for us. It's just, it's alarming. It would really appear that most of the healthcare people are practicing medicine as it was thought to be appropriate 30 and 40 years ago. Yet when one reads in detail their studies, this is clearly not appropriate recommendations. It's a difficult read, but I definitely recommend the book.
Mm-hmm. Sam?
Yeah, that's a very consequential book. In fact, the main thrust of the argument appeared in the New York Times Magazine. And, yes, it's an important and controversial book. And, you know, it's funny when you look at books like that, in a very broad sense, about diet, caloric intake, health, you actually are getting to, like, a crucial issue in the society because you tend to think of it just in terms of yourself, you know. Do I want to lose weight? Do I want to look better? But in fact, this is where all the healthcare issues, a lot of them I think are going to converge, is just on the sort of individual wellness and such, especially as the economy gets so weak. So a book like Taubes is really important because most of us, to some extent, are going to have to take care of ourselves. We're going to have to live better. And Taubes' argument is controversial, but it's fairly impressive. And it didn't make our list because it's, for a couple of reasons, it's complicated for us to, when we draw up a list, to include too many books that have had a New York Times platform, as we say. That is to say, this is a book that was more or less launched in our pages.
Mm.
And also, we tend to stick to the very broadest kinds of nonfiction themes and narratives. Partly because it just makes our job easier. You know, we see some 200,000 books a year.
Oh, my gosh.
And we review only a fraction of them. And then you have to choose 100 of those. And then next week, we're going to have our 10 best books of the year, which is the tiniest category of all. And at a certain point, you know, it's just overwhelmingly subjective.
Mm-hmm.
And you just end up with what you do. And as a result, a lot of really good books get excluded from the list.
Tell me about, I haven't read him in a long time, Philip Roth's book this year, Indignation.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have
that
read it?
That's on our list.
I know it's on the list, yeah.
Yeah, it's not really major Roth. Mm. You know, he's always very good. He's a master. And here he has done something almost similar to what he did in his very earliest fiction, which is to write about a kind of straight-laced version of himself. We're used to the more kind of flamboyant and kind of unrestrained Philip Roth, who uses his own psychology and the great power of language and narrative to kind of break all the barriers in the culture, whether they're sexual or moral and psychological. What he's done in Indignation is write about someone who is unable to break through, to break any of the taboos.
Hmm.
And who lives a very orderly, obedient life. So it's a New Jersey boy who transfers to a college in Winesburg, Ohio. And there's an actual Winesburg, Ohio, but of course it's best known as the title of Sherwood Anderson's famous collection of short stories about Middle America that was published almost 100 years ago. And what Roth has done is to recreate, the novel is set in the 50s, it's actually set during the Korean War, it's to recreate that kind of straight-laced, very conservative America that hadn't discovered or was repressing its wilder side, and to put himself, a very straight-laced version of himself, in the narrative. And it's very deftly done. It's a small book rather than a large one. But it's still Roth that, you know, with his enormous powers. And he, in some ways, gets more and more interesting as he gets older. Another master, almost identical in age to Roth, who is a new novel, is John Updike, The Widows of Eastwick, which returns to the bestseller from the 1980s, The Witches of Eastwick, which is made into a film.
Mm-hmm.
And Updike has kind of done a similar thing. He's kind of going back to some of the earlier material he's worked with and tried to find a new setting for it.
Let's go to an email here. I just read City of Refuge. Takes place in New Orleans before, during, and after Katrina. Excellent. It got into the emotions people have about their city and the effect of the hurricane on emotions and on the city. Have you read that one? Is that on your list?
I have not. Of course, there is a vast Katrina literature, some of it very good. I have not read that book.
Let's go to Pete. Thanks for your call. Mary is next from Menominee. Hi, Mary.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. I am calling to share with you one of the best reads I've had a chance to take a look at in a very long time, and this is called River of Hope, My Journey with Kathy in Search of Healing from Lou Gehrig's Disease. The author is David Tank, who was married to Kathy, and he has written this book within the year of her death. It is an incredible story of their journey off the traditional medical path through holistic measures, outstanding research that David cites in the book for people who are looking for alternatives. When he was diagnosed, they were pretty much told through the medical community to prepare for death, and they chose to instead continue with preparing for life. So this is the story not only of their fight and discovery of alternative methods to deal with ALS, it's an incredible, moving, funny, I laughed, I cried, story about relationship. It is a marvelous tribute to Kathy herself, but also to the marriage that she and David had together and how they worked their partnership through to the very last seconds of her life. It's available at www.planertcreekpress.com. It's Planert. And it's about 200 pages. It's definitely a one-evening read. It's hard to put down. He's got tributes here from Dan Lixit of the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram and, of course, Mike Perry, author of Population 485 and Truck and other essays. And it's really a marvelous, marvelous personal read and journey.
Thank you, Mary. Thanks very much for your call. Let's go to Cindy from Menominee. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. I was just wanting to recommend Benazir Bhutto's last book, Reconciliation, which she submitted the morning of her assassination. It's quite powerful in a couple different ways. She was the former prime minister of Pakistan, and her husband, I believe, is now the prime minister. And she goes into the Quran and actually dispels many of the much of the confusion about Islam and its spiritual guidance for the Islamic people.
Mm.
She also discusses the role that that America has played in many smaller countries in the world.
This would be a good time to read something like that, wouldn't it, Sam?
Yes. Actually, that's. I'm glad the caller mentioned that book. It's one that we did not include on our list but might well have. It's really two books in one, as the caller very succinctly said. One part of the book is almost a kind of denunciation of American foreign policy, which we've probably all heard before, not to say it's not often accurate, but maybe there isn't so much news in it. But the second part of the book is a quite brilliant discussion of Islam and how it can be moderated, what the possibilities are within Islam for moderating the more radical elements. That was reviewed for us by Fareed Zakaria, a name that will register with many of your listeners. And he thought it was as sophisticated and subtle analysis of Islam and politics as he has read.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, had she not been assassinated, she would have been celebrated for many things, but also for this book, for this very bold and original discussion of what may still be the most pressing problem of our time.
Yeah. Thanks, Cindy. So the top 10 comes out when? When can we get it online, Sam?
You can get it online tomorrow evening,
oh,
I believe. Yeah,
okay.
We'll post it either tomorrow evening or Thursday morning. What happens is we close the print edition. Close means send it to press. The end of the day, Wednesday. And at that point, once it's printed up, copies go out to publishers.
Okay.
So we like to be the ones ourselves who announce the news of our top 10.
All right, we'll get it tomorrow. We have to go. Thank you, Sam, so much for being with us. Thanks.
Hey, my pleasure.
Sam Tannenhaus, editor of the New York Times Book Review and The Week in Review. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, to John Treader for on-air production in Milwaukee, and thanks for your calls. Until tomorrow on the Ideas Network.